those real diamonds?
They're pretty near.
Oh, my. My. I didn't know you had a girlfriend.
Oh, yes, I... Probably isn't easy for you to imagine anyone like a man of my type.
But... Now, Mr. Crawley, don't let's start all over again. It's Christmas and I'd like to be friends with you. Besides, you're wrong. Do you mind if I tell you something?
No, not at all.
Well, when I first came to work here, something very strange happened to me. I got psychologically mixed up.
You don't say?
Yes. I found myself looking at you again and again. I just couldn't take my eyes off you.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And all the time I kept saying to myself, Clara Novak, what on earth is the matter with you? This Kralik is not a particularly attractive type of man. I hope you don't mind.
No, no.
Now, here comes the paradox. I found myself falling for you.
I can't believe it.
Yes, Mr. Kralik, and very much so.
You certainly didn't show it.
Listen, in those first few weeks, well, I know you won't misconstrue what I'm going to say to you. After all, I'm very happily engaged. At least it looks that way.
Yes, well, go on.
Oh, in those first few weeks, there were moments in the stockroom when you could have swept me off my feet.
Now I'm getting psychologically mixed up.
Well, you see, I was a different girl then. I was really rather naive. All my knowledge came from books, and I just finished a novel about a glamorous French actress from the Comédie Française. That's a theater in France. And when she wanted to rouse a man's interest, she treated him like a dog.
Yes, well, you treated me like a dog.
Yes, but instead of licking my hand, you barked. You see, my mistake was, I didn't realize that the difference between this glamorous lady and me was that she was with the Comédie Française and I was with Matacek and company.
So hi and welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Damian. I recovered.
You recovered?
Yeah, I beat Christmas.
You beat it. Okay.
You won.
All right, there was a fight.
Well,
I was victorious.
Yeah, I clearly did not win that fight. This is Douglas. And perhaps we have a podcast. Do we?
I think so.
How are we going to talk about anything today? No, we're probably just going to talk. Hey, CES is around the corner.
Yes.
All right, so... What are we excited about?
How much is Andrew going to have to edit?
I haven't seen Douglas with stubble in a long while. He usually shaves.
Yeah, it's been
because he goes
been
to
a
work.
While. Yeah,
yeah, and I must say, I feel a bit threatened. He's like, he's growing into his Russian mobster face. The look, not the voice yet. It's coming. You just need to swallow some more gravel. And dispense with the t-shirts and only wife beaters.
But I have the right t-shirt for the Russian mobster.
You go.
I'm wearing it right now.
Just wife beaters and and draw slippers.
Yep. Yep. And just drinking vodka.
No, you don't need to actually, I mean, you're not in Russia, so you don't have to actually be Russian, but you can still look it. Dress for the job you want, which is Russian mobster.
Moving along,
right?
As this week we're going to be talking about...
Russian mobsters?
Mm-hmm. Not Russian mobsters, about Australian prisons that are not Australia. As we discussed, Derek C. and France's latest film.
Yeah, we're talking
film,
about a prison movie, right?
Like so Between the Oceans.
Is this Hunger? Is that the movie we're talking about?
No, it's a well, I think the joke Andrew's trying to make is that it's an Australian
no,
movie.
No, I know.
So,
right.
There are
and
prison
there are
movies.
Prisons, yeah. He's trying to derail his silly joke.
No, but I like that joke.
Fair point.
This movie is about a married couple who mm-hmm. live by a lighthouse mm-hmm. off the coast. Right. In Western Australia.
And then a dingo ate their baby.
And then one day a child appears in a boat. With them having trouble conceiving, the wife decides, let's keep this child.
Right, because they're Australian.
Quickly thereafter, we discover the grieving mother and widow, who is now without child and doesn't know what's going on, and we follow the family as this continues.
Okay.
Dearest Isabel, I can't stop thinking about the time I spent with you.
Dearest Tom, when I first saw you, I felt like I knew you, and I couldn't stop seeing my life with you.
To be loved by you allowed me to feel again.
No!
What can I do?
What should I do?
Douglas, you brought this movie to our attention.
Okay.
I didn't know about it. I had no idea.
Yeah,
you
had no
was.
Clue. Yeah.
I've been living under a rock. But you said you wanted us to talk about it. So Douglas, why don't you kick us off with something?
So some things
that you think about movies.
Yeah, right. This is Cian France's latest.
Is that
gift
two
to the
is
world?
Is that two people?
Yeah, C and France. Yes, right. two okay. Separate people.
Like, I thought Paula and Porto was one person for a long time. I thought it was Paula Ann, and her last name was Porto. Didn't realize it was two different people.
This is a joke, right?
No.
Because she is one person.
Damn it, Douglas. Hey, Douglas. So
2016 ended with a bang.
All right, so hi and welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. Tonight we're talking about The Light Between Oceans. Douglas picked this movie by proxy of Andrew. Douglas, tell us about this movie.
So this movie, the Boat Between the Seas, France's latest romp.
The Light Around the Oceans.
Yes. The oceans next to the lakes. All right. Was all right. So
The Notebook is what this movie.
The Notebook. My goodness. This movie was something. I had to watch it because Cian France gave me Blue Valentine, and you have to have loyalty once that happens, once you've seen that movie. This movie, it's kind of not that great a movie to start off with, but it's almost more interesting to watch this movie within the context of what I suppose you could call the oeuvre of Cian France, right? So he has three major movies. He might have more, but definitely three that have, you know, gotten a lot of
press.
The first is Blue Valentine. The next was The Place Beyond the Pines. And now this, The Water Between the Footprints. Mm-hmm. And both of those, all three of those movies have a clear kind of theme to them, which is before and after, right? They're always almost two perspectives shown with a significant amount of contrast in them. So in Blue Valentine, you're talking about before and after essentially the end of this relationship between Gosling and Michelle Williams. In Place Beyond the Pines, you have before and after this huge event in the life of Bradley Cooper. And now in this, you have sort of the before and after their discrepancy, their
Australian lifestyle.
acquisition. Their post-child acquisition.
Post-child acquisition, yes. All right. And I feel like you can see the... You can see how his almost style has developed in that with the Blue Valentine, it's very, they're very clear delineations between what is before and after. The movie is kind of all over the place and you go back and forth between present and future or present and past, but it's, you know where you are, right? It's a present scene and then a big cut to the past. And there are visual cues, there are strong cuts, you know what's going on most of the time. With Place Beyond the Pines, it's almost a sequential thing, where you still have quite a strong delimiter, but it's not as in your face anymore. It's almost like just the development of the story. And in this one, it's like that kind of barrier is still softened even more. Or at least that's what I remember thinking about when I watched this movie. So much so that I see Andrew doing some Googling over there, and I'm sure he's thinking to himself, I don't see what Douglas is saying. But, you know, I feel like all of his movies have a clear, like a tipping point, right? And he, just because it's the title of a Roots album, doesn't, you know, mean that I'm making that joke.
No, yeah, I made it for myself.
All right, fair enough.
Love that album.
It is a good album.
Damn it, man.
It's real good.
The Roots, yeah. Come back.
Yeah.
Save me from rap hell.
But there is that. And this movie, it's fine. It's not the worst. It's definitely not the best. What I really found funny about the movie, because I always have to find something.
He picks up on the mic, stop dropping it and rubbing it all over the desk.
I always have to find something dumb about the movies that I'm watching. Is that I feel like every character in this movie has a pretty good Australian accent, except for the two lead characters, except for Fassbottom and Vikander, right? Neither of them, in my mind.
Right, they didn't even attempt.
Yeah. I mean, at least Fassbottom has an Irish accent to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Irish, right? And he you can see he kind of tries to soften certain things, and so, okay, he's trying to make that transition. Vikander, from day one, I'm like, oh, she still has that accent, mm-hmm. where she's from. Is she Swedish?
Listen, you're asking the wrong person, so.
She's Norwegian, I believe. And I remember laughing to myself.
Swedish.
Yes, there we go.
Congrats.
I remember laughing to myself because every once in a while you'd hear her kind of elongate her E's, and I'd be like, wait, that almost sounds like a Swedish person making fun of an Australian. So, you know, there was that. This movie, the thing about it, why, like, some of the negatives for me was that it hammered down the feelings real hard, right? It made you who, Vikander?
No. Okay. It's not this girl from Mr. Church. She was in Tomorrowland.
Oh.
That is where I know her from. Yeah, that movie
was
is
she the lead in Tomorrowland?
Trash. Yep.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't remember where I was. Or what I'm sorry. I was talking about
hammering down the feelings.
Right.
Yes.
Putting that on a shirt.
how many shirts do you have at this point?
Too many.
Yeah.
One day.
He has when a full wardrobe.
When I get one printed.
Yeah, but it was very just. Boy, this movie was just kind of. You had this essentially crazy woman in Vikander who. I shouldn't say crazy, but very emotional, very, and then willing to take this step of, you know what? I'm fine with doing this fairly horrible thing. And the husband is like, well, listen, we could just give it to people and then we could adopt her. Uh-huh. It would be great. It could work. She's like, no, I'll be a criminal, thanks.
She's like, bird in the hand. She was right, though. No one is giving children to people that live on a lighthouse. It's probably last on the list of getting children.
What you do is you just murder everyone else who's asking for children.
Listen,
that's a fair point, yeah.
That's less, I mean, crazy than what she did.
Is it?
You get that list of people on the adoption list and you just murder all of them.
Yeah. But this movie was just chock full of intentionally sappy moments. All over the place. It even, you know, you refer to the Notebook, as you said, Damien, at the end it had kind of a Notebook-esque sort of feel to it.
At the start as well. Yeah. Those messages passing back and forth. I'm like, oh no. He did this.
I love how he's like one letter in. You know what? Yeah, let's get married. Let's do that.
Hold on, Damien. According to your ruling, does that make it her fault?
No, this movie is 100% her
fault. No. Yeah. Beyond the actual crime part. I'm talking about...
Right. If she did stop love man, then she'd be fine. She broke the rule. Right.
All
right,
cool. I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to make sure that I'm interpreting your law correctly. She saw him.
He didn't even see her to begin with. He just came to the house and she saw him and started smiling her face off. I'm like, I know where this is going.
And it did.
Yep.
She broke the rule.
I actually kind of like this movie. Like, I don't love it. Like, I thought it was, it was true to what it was trying to accomplish, and it did it relatively well. Like, we have this relationship and this event that occurs that changes everything. It starts out as a regular Notebook-esque movie where letters are passing along. There's a wedding. They're happily frolicking through the lighthouse lands and having chickens and animals and farms and enjoying themselves. And they're having a bit of trouble conceiving and causing some tension. And then you have this event occur where the child appears in the boat and the wife convinces him to go along with this horrible thing that they're about to do. I actually thought it was interesting because, I mean, I knew it was going to happen from seeing the trailers, but I was surprised how quickly the movie showed us the Rachel Weisz character and the fact that he now knows exactly that it's not the best case scenario he thought it could have been. That being that the child literally has no one at this point. And it's almost a victimless crime. Only for him to find the victim. And he then makes his own decision to keep that away from his wife. To let her believe that it is a victimless crime. And they're doing a good thing to take the child in and give them a home. And all of these things which are all lies. I thought that was really interesting because it made him even more complicit than the obvious level that he already is by allowing it to occur. But the movie, it creates its tension through those moments, and it worked for me. This isn't the movie that at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, that I'm going to be referencing back 10 years on. Right, this is the one that, as we talk about Cien France, we're going to forget this one. We're going to keep talking about Pines and Blue Valentine. This is the one that is going to probably be lost in the ether, and I hope is a blip. But I definitely thought it was a good movie. It's a solid movie for anyone who likes this sort of story.
If you like this movie,
if you like,
then you like this movie.
Yeah.
Do you like movies?
Okay. Do you like movies where people kidnap children?
Do you like this one? Then you like this one.
But yeah. it's a good movie. Like
this movie's fine, you know. But it's, as you say, it's not anything special.
I knew nothing of this movie when I started watching it, and I did the thing I said I was not going to do anymore, which is watch trailers for movies that I definitely have to watch. But I didn't. I went, I need to see what this is. I need to prepare myself for the shenanigans that's about to befall me. And then I saw Fassbender. I went, all right, I hope this isn't some kind of madness.
Please no Assassin's Creed.
Yes, please no. Then I saw the trailer said straight up, they lose a baby and they find a baby on the sea. And I went, no movie, no, whoever wrote this, stop it here, no one to see this. And then he just so happens to find the mother of the baby grieving at, I'm like, what? It's like, there's no, this much coincidence is impossible. Movie, this is dumb. This is dumb writing. This is dumb writing by a dumb person. Think about the chances of him going to a funeral home and seeing the grieving mother.
Church.
And seeing the grieving mother at the graveside crying about her lost husband and daughter. The one time he goes there, what, a year? that's a narrow window. the Venn diagram, they barely touch on the outside. There's no overlap there. And finding the baby, like, the day after the, like, there's just, I was, felt myself get upset at the trailer. I'm like, this movie's stupid. Then, saw the director and got real angry. Like, are you, like, you really going to throw away all that talent on this? This is what you do? Like, alright, movie, let's get this over with. And then at the end of the movie, I wasn't as angry. The story's still dumb. Real dumb. Like, especially how it ends. Crazy stupid. No 4-year-old remembers anything. I don't remember anything from being 4, because I was 4.
You can look at that as someone telling her that throughout all of her childhood. Remember when you were 4?
Right, remember when someone kidnapped you
from... Remember when you used to be a dick to me because you thought I wasn't...
remember when they kidnapped you between the ages of 0 and 4? Oh, that's right, you don't. So we're moving on. No one tells her that.
So. Mommy, why aren't there pictures of me when I was 2? We didn't have you then.
Because it is not a present-day movie and we don't have the technology. Literally don't have the technology to do that.
But you have all the pictures from 4 all the way
up. Right. That's when technology was invented. Douglas is right in that the movie is sappy, but the lead actors do such an outstanding job of acting the shit out of this movie. And at a certain point, you actually feel sorry for them, despite the fact that they're both monsters. If you find a child anywhere, the thing you should do is go to the police and say, hey, I found a child. Could you tell me if this child has... I understand that the father was dead in the boat, but the father might have family. The mother might have family. There might be people looking for this baby and would rejoice in the return of said baby, even if they didn't have a mother and father. I'm pretty sure there's other people. Maybe both mother and father came from the same orphanage and fell in love and had a child and both died at sea. That's the kind of logic you're working with. Sure. Outside of that, no. Not so much. But
maybe they're both in Sweden.
Right.
That's too far.
Cool. At the end of this movie, all the anger that I felt coming in had gone away. He knows how to make movies. The story he told in this one ain't great, but he did his job. with this story, I don't see how he could have made a better movie. Telling this story, he did good a job as anyone could do. Fassbender reminds everyone that he's still at the top of his game. When he's asked to do actual acting, he'll do it.
Look,
when he's
asked to play Assassin's Creed.
Right, when he's asked to play a flying ninja from a video game, he'll do that too.
Wow. I saw Assassin's Creed.
You shouldn't have done that. I saw the trailer. That was enough. And let me not lie. I saw maybe 20 seconds of the trailer. I went, I've seen enough. It's going to be bad. It's bad, isn't it?
It is worse than bad.
Cool. Is it Prince of Persia bad?
Keep going.
Hey! Hey!
No, I did that. I asked him specifically.
Keep going.
Because he hates that movie.
Yeah, he does.
And so, for him to say that it's worse than that, he's saying something. And the girl, I can't pronounce her name. Can't remember her name.
Alicia Vikander.
And was confusing her face with a far inferior actress.
Who did you think she was?
That's okay, I'm not telling you.
She was in
Anna Karenina, she was in A Royal Affair.
She was in Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, and Man from U.N.C.L.E. Yeah. And The Danish Girl. Mm-hmm. She's real good. And most of the time you spend is with them. Rachel Weisz, or however you pronounce that name, don't care anymore.
The girl from The Mummy?
She is miserable the entire time. And,
for good reason, though.
But that is her entire range of emotion. It's misery. Even when her child is returned, still miserable. That facial expression doesn't change at once. Which, maybe that's how it's written. I don't know. But kind of stop feeling sorry for her when she continued to be miserable the entire time.
Scenes where you see her smile.
There was some key bits of writing that I did enjoy. I enjoyed her, the German, Rachel Weisz's husband, explaining why he's happy all the time. I enjoyed that. I wish I could be like that. I wish I could forgive people and only remember the good things. But that's not how my brain works.
Because you're a monster.
I am. I've never denied that once. So, I don't care. And I was also impressed with the final letter that Fassbender sent to the girl. And clearly they had heartstrings and were just yanking them as hard as possible. But it was effective because the acting on screen, like, it felt right even though the story made very little sense. But like, this movie did nothing to damper how much I enjoy this director. Like, he did his job. I don't blame him for this movie being this way. I blame this story, which is garbage. But yeah, like, I really thought that this movie was just... I thought that Andrew had found 2016's Dear Zachary, is what I thought. But it wasn't. This movie is... It's not bad, but he has two far superior movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just don't even... Like, even if you'd seen both and are thinking to give this a shot, just watch the first two again. Pretend this didn't happen. You're not missing anything. I mean, a good performance from Michael Fassbender, but you can find that other places.
One of the things I actually really liked about this movie was in the latter half, once a child was returned, mm-hmm. and there's a scene that we see with them all in like a... I can't remember what kind of shop it is, but they're all in a shop together.
Like a general store.
Or something. Right. Actually, I think they were shopping for fabric.
Yeah. And the child sees Vikando, yeah. right, and runs to her because she's still in the mental mode of that is my mother.
She's four, yeah.
And you can watch Rachel Weisz in her misery mm-hmm. just stand there and try to figure out like how to move forward in this current moment. Mm-hmm. Not thinking about the next 5 years where she's trying to get her to understand that this is what her life is going to be. But like this moment, how do you peacefully get the child and move on.
You don't do it peacefully.
yeah.
You go grab your daughter and go, if you even look at her again, I am going to murder you. Are we clear?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. One thing I did like about this movie was some of the casting was wonderful. Like, yeah. So the grandfather, I remember seeing him and being like,
wait, which one is that?
Oh, the real grandfather, rich guy. Mm-hmm. And I knew the face, and then I realized, he got all of his riches by, you know, serving drinks with Tom Cruise and then coming back to Australia, clearly.
You're an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, but he died in that movie.
Not if you stopped 3/4 of the way.
Okay, all right, cool.
This movie also should have ended when she hugged Fassbender on the boat. The post thing, everything after that was unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been fine. Like, I think it's fine either way.
No, I really think that last scene did a disservice to the movie. I don't think it was necessary.
Yeah, it did. It pulled the heartstrings just way too hard. No,
it rewarded him for something that he should have felt terrible about his entire life. I don't think that... And she's 4... If she had been returned at 12, then sure. 4? No. No one remembers anything from the time they're 4. It just doesn't happen.
Art,
and there's no way the stories she was told would in any way endear her to the people what stole her. Like, she isn't going to be said, you were rescued by this lovely family and then returned to us. That isn't the story that she's going to be told. She is going to, something terrible happened to your father and we're still not sure what happened with him. What we do know is that someone had stolen you for 4 years and then a crisis of conscience in one led to us recovering you and sending both of them to prison. That is the only story that she's told by anybody in that family. No one softens that story for her. Cool. Even a little bit.
Out of curiosity, like, you mentioned you're rewarding Fassbender for something that he should never have done. Yes. Horrible monster. Mm-hmm. All these wonderful words. Is there anywhere that you look at what happened there, and not so necessarily rewarding him, but how he feels about the whole thing, where he has the dichotomy of the guilt of what he actually did versus the love for what he enjoyed for those 4 years? No? He's just a monster, done, end of story.
Listen, I used to tell lies and steal shit all the time. So I was a dumb child at one point. The thing that makes you an adult is making adult decisions. It's a hard decision. But you know, there's literally only one decision to be made in that situation. And they didn't do that. Right? For the benefit of the child. Like, put it this way, they could have tried to have other children. Having given back the one that washed up on the sea, they could have tried to have more children. They could have. Or, as he said, adopted a child. Not that child, maybe they couldn't get that one, but they could have adopted a child. But they didn't do that. They stole a baby.
Are you saying they weren't good enough for that child?
No, the movie shows you only their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I understand why you feel some inkling of, you know...
Yeah, the movie makes you want to have empathy for them. Right. Absolutely.
But the thing that they did shows zero empathy for that child's family. They stole the baby. Like, there's nothing more. That is as black and white as you can put it.
Right? I don't think anyone is debating the crime. I'm talking about...
No, but him giving her back does, like, he still stole the child. Like, there's only one thing to do in that situation.
So burn him at the stake and just leave him there.
No. He doesn't get... You don't get to do a bad thing, right? Knowingly, and then years down the line go I mean, it was bad, but what?
So you're saying leave him on the blacklist and he's done with life?
No, the two of them. Like, the two of them deserve each other. They're two terrible people that made a terrible decision and deserve to be miserable. Now that they've been caught, they deserve whatever they get. What they don't deserve is how this movie ends. Because that's not a thing. It doesn't happen that way. You know how I know that? Worst thing happened to the children. But it's a far better story, and I prefer that story. There are children who, when military is coming to wipe out people, they usually don't kill the children because they are not heartless monsters. But a few of them, instead of leaving the children to suffer and die or survive how they want, there have been a lot of cases where the people take the children and raise them as their own. And then years down the line when they find out that, oh wait, this person murdered all of my family, the man that I call father and all these people that I call grandfather and brother, none of these people are my actual family, but the one that I call father, he murdered all of my real family. When they talk to those people, all of the conversations go only one way. They now have to deal with the struggle of forgetting that person, because that is the only father they know. But the truth is that the reason that exists is because he murdered all of the other people. And they have to struggle with that. And they find it difficult to hate the person because they weren't that person to them. But it always plays out the same way. When they're asked to testify against the father, they don't testify on his behalf. Do you know why? Because he murdered everyone for them. It's happened time and again. And none of them ever are character witnesses for the father. Because while he was a good man to them, there was this time, long time ago, where he murdered everybody. Yeah, that's how the world works. Not this book, though, / movie. It doesn't happen like that. You don't get forgiveness for doing something that horrible. You
can't. And that's why you're not the German character.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why I'm not the German character.
In this movie.
Yeah.
I think you need to listen to him a little bit more.
No, he is a poorly written character. In a shitty movie. So, no. No, I will not listen.
You only need to forgive one Steven.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. You should go find some of those children. That last step. You forgive your father and you go, No. No, don't. That's always the answers. No. No. In fact, what most of them say is, what I would have preferred is to never have found out. Because that would make their life easier. When he's dead, tell me then. Not now, when I can't stare at him. So I'm going to have to ask him questions. Like, why did you murder everybody? And it happens when they're children, so they don't even remember. Right? They didn't even remember that there's a different life out there. At all. She's 4. She wouldn't have remembered.
But Douglas has gotten really quiet.
That thing is still good. The story's dumb.
Yeah. I agree with most of what Damien is saying. Except for, so about the movie. Not necessarily about fuck those guys. Just simply because the movie does its job in terms of giving you some sort of empathy towards them. But I do agree that last, say, 5-minute sequence wasn't necessary.
Yeah, just end it when she's hugging him. That's fine.
What it does is it's just regurgitating the point of, you know, this is a sappy movie. Let's have a somewhat happy ending and try and move forward. You know, and it's just...
It feels forced.
It's not particularly earned, right? This movie, it's fine, you know. It's an okay movie. And you put it best to say that the director did essentially the best that he could do with the content that he was given. He directed it proficiently. The actors were actually pretty good. But there's only so much you can do with the story, right? So this is the type of movie where if you
Yes, if you like this type of movie, you will like this type of movie.
Yeah, it's
bingo.
But it's definitely the type of movie where you have a predisposition, and the only way for you to like it is to have that predisposition. For you to say, I want to try and cry at the end of the movie, or I want to you know.
I cried during Godzilla.
I shouldn't say this.
Then you should definitely say it.
But this is 100% true. If you replace the two people that took the baby with ugly people, it's over. It's done. Like, the reason you feel anything towards them and the crime that they committed is because they're beautiful people. It's the truth. Ugly people get convicted more often, vastly, than beautiful people. That is how the criminal justice system works. You're welcome for that. You can go look at the numbers. Don't listen to me.
I'm not disputing the numbers.
So that's
facts,
what I'm saying.
Right.
If I'm talking both about these people were hard on the eyes
at this table.
No, if those people were hard on the eyes, we wouldn't forgive them. They look like monsters. If they looked on the outside, what they did on the inside, would be. If this was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre people that took the baby, we'd be done. Even if they treated her the exact same way, this would be over. You wouldn't feel anything. You just like, burn these two people and let's get this movie over.
Yeah. I honestly don't even know what to
say. Alright, but they're pretty.
I'm like,
so here's something. All right. Pretty people can't do bad things, right, Douglas? That's why I've skated through some beautiful.
And next week, we'll be talking about how I'm still alive. Wow.
Because you're smart.
Because I'm smart. Yeah. Am I?
You think things about movies. Smart enough.
Enough. All right, I'll take that.
You're
smart
welcome.
Enough.
You'll be president one day, don't you worry.
That seems like a lot of work. Don't want to do all of that work.
Don't. George Bush didn't. Trump didn't. It's fine.
But he still has to, like, say things to people. And be,
I mean, you don't have to.
Cool. All right, yeah, I'll do it.
You're a
I'll
president.
Do it then. All right.
Everybody was in a state of panic. It was just chaos.
It's like a battle scene.
There are two different kinds of shots.
Apparently, police are returning the fire now.
My mission was to get into the tower.
I can't make out what you're saying. You keep cutting down now.
There's a guy on top of the tower, and he's shooting. Shooting at people.
We didn't know who was being killed. People were dying.
There's no report as
to. So this week.
Oh, okay.
This week, I wanted to talk about
Star Wars.
Star Wars. Have you seen Star Wars?
No. Still haven't. Tried.
Haven't seen Star
Tried.
Wars.
Didn't get there.
Okay.
The one night went. The lady all but laughed in my face. I'm like, Star Wars, and ha! Not till tomorrow. Alright, cool. I'm not coming here. Tomorrow was New Year's Eve. No, that was Christmas Eve.
That's when it tells me insufficient seats. Trying to buy more tickets. I saw a tower. Same thing I was talking to you about downstairs. No one man should have. God damn it.
You're welcome.
It's this new documentary that people have been talking about.
People. Damn it.
People. You remember them?
Must we listen to them?
No, we don't have to. But I've decided to.
Alright, what did people say this time?
No, they just mentioned it, and I've seen it, and now I'd like to talk about it.
Okay.
And that's the end of the people part.
All right, good.
It's a documentary recollecting the 1966 mass shooting that occurred in Texas, in Austin, Texas, at the university, in which a gentleman decided to take a position at the tower at the university, and with a rifle just randomly shoot people for almost an hour and a half until eventually it ended. This is told entirely through recreation that's done through rotoscoping and voiceover narration. from all of the people who they've got to talk about what happened that day. Some people who were injured, some people who were on the police force who went to protect people, some people who just showed up and helped, some people who didn't even help, some people were just there and afraid and couldn't find it in themselves to do anything. And I think this documentary is kind of fantastic. It's an interesting, like, because I don't know, what is it Captain Fantastic? Mm-mm. No, that's not what you're laughing at. Okay.
Because you know, if it's a Shaggy, I'm going to stab you in the face.
You know, it's really, no. Really okay. Dumb in his head. It's,
yeah.
it's bombastic.
Kind of fantastic.
Okay.
It's a little bit.
Not
a
quite bit fantastic.
Yeah, it's a little bit superlative. Yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Leave me alone.
So let him reverse back into his point.
We're all Jamaican. That's what we're supposed to say, right? Right?
All
right. Wait, hold on. I don't think I am.
Oh, yeah. Let's check Andrew's shirt.
Where am I?
My shirt is blue. Says nothing.
It says turtle.
I'm still confused.
That's where I'm supposed to return you when...
Oh, okay, right. Just in case of emergency. Yeah. Return to...
Yours says Control-Z.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to undo a whole lot of things.
First thing is this shirt.
Anyways, this documentary. So, one of the things that I've become more and more intrigued with when it comes to documentaries is the sincerity of them, or at least taking them in a sincere manner. There's a lot of times where we talk about all of these things in movies, or even when we talk about even just the news and what's going on in the world, and we look at it in a ridiculously critical manner for good reason, right? But every once in a while, there are times when someone is sitting in front of you and they're expressing their feelings or bringing up their history, and I feel almost refreshing not to completely eviscerate what they're saying, no, that's not how facts work, but to actually just take in everything. So, I mean, earlier this year, I made you guys watch, and we didn't end up talking about it, because on top of everything else, timing and everything else, the movie ended up not being very good to begin with. The Werner Herzog documentary, Lo and Behold.
Sorry, did we not talk about that documentary?
We didn't talk about it because that happened during the week before TIFF, and then, like, we just didn't record week.
We recorded that episode.
No, we didn't. We did
sure?
not.
Sure? I recall talking about it.
No, we talked about it. Damien was not here.
I did not talk about it.
What?
But, anyways, throughout that documentary, there are a lot of points where there are some things in there that, if you hear people say some of those things out loud, we almost want to laugh at it for how ridiculous it is, because we almost can't believe that sort of a thing would happen. But when someone is sitting there and expressing the fact that they have this problem or this happened to them, right? There's something just wonderfully sincere about it, about having that occur. And with this documentary, I found it interesting because throughout most of the movie, it's actually just recollecting events. There are times where it will turn off the rotoscoping and switch to what was documented on the day, like through the news or photographers, when they have that evidence. So, for example, they will be showing you the news reporter out there trying to get a story from someone, and it'll be rotoscoped, and then halfway through it will cut to a video of the reporter and the guy talking, and you'll actually see live video. There are times when it'll show you the shooter taking a shot at and hitting a newspaper stand, and then it cuts to a photograph of that to show you, yeah, that really happened. But it still doesn't shy away from the feelings part, the as it relates to each person, how they felt during these events, not just the mechanics of it. So, for example, there's one lady who they got to interview who she was pregnant and she got shot, and she was basically laying in the middle of the open space for most of this event. And there are points where she starts to talk about how the heat started to affect her mentally, how some woman came up by her and laid down beside her, and that woman, knowing she wasn't physically able to move her, just laid down beside her, talking to her to try to keep her conscious. And all of these things, it was just an interesting documentary to watch and to... I don't think it's like a top tier movie of the year, but I think it's just an interesting movie. And I mean, especially with the way that mass shootings have been going from that year to now, and the movie definitely makes you think of it, because when it's over, it kind of just reels through the news of the last 4, 5 to 10 years, just going like, Columbine, this one, that one, that one. And you're like, yeah, these things are still happening. And I just thought it was something to bring up.
I mean, Douglas doesn't watch documentaries, but I'll definitely I'll give that one a watch. I don't know the actual details of that shooting, so that in itself will be, you know, interesting to watch. And I mean, enjoy is a weird word to use, but I've always been fascinated with people who have to, who have, or in the case of military people, who continue to go through like high stress moments. Because it's a thing I hopefully will never, ever, ever have to deal with. And listening to people's reaction in those moments is always, like, the range of reactions. As you said, there's people who just, like, once it happened, they just froze. They're just like, if I don't move, hopefully this lunatic won't shoot me in the face. And it's funny, like, I know that, especially in America, there's, like, always books about the person's point of view. Like, if they survive, they like to write books about the person, why they became who they became. But I've never actually read or looked into any of those, like, the person's reasoning for doing these things. I've never been fascinated with.
They don't even touch him, because
obviously that's not, I'm pretty sure they murdered him, right? So there's not much to go on.
I think other than, like, at the end, they show, like, an article that was published at the time about him going, like, this is who he was.
Right.
That's about
but,
it.
But, you see it whenever, there's, people who do, that commit heinous crimes and survive, people want to go and talk to them and ask them questions. I've never wanted to hear any of it. None of it has ever been fascinated to me. But people who survive this, and it's part of the thing that I enjoyed about Restrepo, a movie both of you hate very much, watching them live through this, like, that high stress moment, and they're just like, it's part of the job, and we do it because we have to do it. And then you see them, because they've been at it for so long, they're just like laughing at the fact that there's always gunfire. Like, a thing that you never ever want to be a part of. They've been at it so long, they're just like, yeah, like, they shoot. Like, they can't hit us. We know they can't hit us, but shoot. Like, we have the big gun, and we could smoke all of the small arms fire. Can't hit us. We're in a helicopter. Like, you guys can't be that cavalier about people trying to shoot you out of the sky. But so I'll definitely give this movie a watch. It seems really interesting.
The last documentary Andrew asked me to watch was Weino. So
yeah, no, you've
Andrew can yeah, you're go you've jump in a lake from the tower.
That's a pretty good argument against.
Yeah.
Weino is really bad.
Really bad.
It's real trash.
I've never felt I don't think I've ever felt so passionate about how horrible a movie was.
You've made us watch a lot of bad movies. Imagine what you're feeling multiplied by, say, 50,000. I felt that about you, Merit.
I'm sure.
Because of some of the movies you've picked, I now think of you as less of a person. You understand that, right?
Is he less than my shirt?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. Does my shirt take me under?
God, I hate you.
Damien, have you watched Britt Marling's latest opus?
No.
Oh, man.
I was busy at home.
Christmasing.
I enjoyed and continue to enjoy my Christmas time.
I really need to talk to somebody about
it. I know, I'll get to it. But right now,
like
there's
Star Wars.
There's,
you know,
people.
You'll get to it.
Yeah, there's people at the house, and I have to continue to Christmas.
So. Only like six, maybe eight episodes.
I understand, but I don't have a TV to watch. All the screens have been. We'll have an actual fight. If you want me to disregard you as a human, that, yes, that is possible. Although, really only for things I've seen already. I don't even like watching movies on my monitor. Because I bought a TV.
I remember I used to do that.
That is what it is for.
Oh my goodness. I used to watch TV and movies on a computer monitor. Yeah. And
I mean, a savage.
Oh, I remember it started when I had it couldn't have been even 19 inches.
Yeah.
4x3 CRT monitor. Mm-mm. Not good. Yeah, I remember, because this was in college, I couldn't lie down on my bed and watch it from the monitor because it was small enough that there are things that you just wouldn't be able to really make out. So I had to jerry-rig up the desk chair and somehow get into a comfortable position by cocking up my foot on the desk or the bed, or, you know, and yeah, it was, yeah, it's not fun.
When
did we go to uni?
2004. Right. So, let's say 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest TV in the house was 25 inches.
Makes sense.
And then I left college. No, actually, this was while I was in college. I made the executive decision to buy myself a computer monitor. And that computer monitor was 24 inches. And then when I left college, I said, we need it. Television and bought us initially bought us a bigger than 42 inch television. That didn't work out.
Yes, I remember that story.
And then bought us a proper TV. Now, no, until recently, I didn't even know we had a screen in the house smaller than 24 inches. Found a 19 inch monitor, don't know where it came from. Very worried. Think it belonged to my sister, not sure. The older I get, the less tolerant I become of small screens. It's not a vision thing. It is a old person thing.
You need the words to be big and bold.
Right, I need the subtitles to be bigger than my phone screen. And I need surround sound. If it is a new movie, I need it in all of the HDs and with all of my surround sound. Or TV shows are different because they are throwaway garbage. But so I watch most of Luke Cage sat on a stationary bicycle with headphones on, staring at a 24 inch monitor, and it was perfectly fine. There's no way I'm watching a movie like that.
I'd burn the house to the ground first. Start again.
Right now, I stare at my TV in the living room every day and go, you understand you're going to be replaced soon. Like, you won't be replaced in terms of position. You'll stay where you are, but I'm buying a bigger, better TV and putting it in a other room where the space is. So yeah, this thing, that joke, it's not good. It's getting worse though. I used to be able to watch movies with shitty headphones. It is sad. I almost bought new headphones.
Not allowed.
No, I mass drop. Like, you sign up for the drop, and then when the drop is over, they send you the headphones. It's this website that.
Oh,
so shit. So I signed up for Hi-Fi Man headphones that they were selling for $99. Because that company only makes class headphones.
Yes, I saw you tweeted about it the other day.
And then I went and looked at the reviews, and it was the wrong headphone. So I had to cancel it.
Oh no.
Damn it. I was less than three, but I keep staring at the headphones you should have bought.
Is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
No.
Nope.
I did it right this Christmas. I watch all the right movies.
Musicals.
Which movies were the right movies?
I
feel like I got in a few good ones.
The movie that we reviewed last week, the Western.
Yeah.
What's the name of that? Hell or High Water. Mm-hmm. That was followed by My Name is Trinity. Mm-hmm. Which was followed by The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
And then it was 2 o'clock in the morning and everyone, the eggnog finally did its job, put mm-hmm. everybody to sleep. Then we woke up and we watched Captain America, Infinity War.
Or whatever. That's not on Netflix.
Whatever the hell the name of that movie is. Then did we watch after that? Watch that. Oh, then my sister called an audible and watched the BFG.
Is it any good?
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's.
I kind of want
Peace to watch Dragon it. Is trash, but this mm-hmm. movie is superior. Then they got stranded on Flash Beach. And then I took over. We watched what's Keanu Reeves' opus? The next one coming
up.
John Wick, right?
Okay. Stop talking
bullshit. So, John Wick. And then they hadn't seen Dread, so we saw Dread. And then I said, you have another movie that is basically this, but it is in Korean.
It's not like, Korean.
They don't know that. And then we saw The Raid 2. Christmas movies. Like The Raid 2. And then The Jungle Book. And then it wasn't sleepy time again.
The old musical?
Yeah, the old musical.
The old one?
Yeah, man. No.
Oh, sure.
Obviously the good one. Why would I watch the terrible one? The new good one.
The old one isn't terrible.
I like the old one too, but the new one is so good.
It's better than it. It can't be that good.
So, do you know that they've given that guy? I'm almost sure it's the Lion King.
John Favreau.
Yes.
Yeah. Why not
to remake
at this point? Like, if he did it with the Jungle Book, look what Steven Spielberg is doing with all the money they give him. He's putting out trash. John Favreau made all the movies you love. At this point, he made the Iron Man you love.
Yeah, he did.
He made the Chef that you won. And
Aliens.
That's not they forced him to do that. That was a mistake from the beginning.
Zathura.
What
is Zathura?
Actually, a lot of people like that movie.
They're all bad people.
I haven't watched it, but essentially, apparently, it's Jumanji.
Douglas, look at me.
No. Okay. All right, fair enough.
Everyone makes bad movies. Except Nolan, but we'll be there ready.
Yeah, it will happen.
I'm pretty sure Dunkirk might.
having looked at that Dunkirk trailer, I think this might be it, guys. I think this might be the clanker.
Finally.
He was due on, like, 10 years ago.
Well, he got insomnia, to be fair.
Except insomnia, I understand you don't like it, but it's not a bad movie.
Alright, fine.
Like, he needs something that people can point to and go, holy shit. Like, John Favreau has a couple, but I still like him, especially now, because there's a point you're going, Douglas likes Chef, and so, like, by osmosis, I think I like it more than I probably should, because someone keeps screaming at me.
Be the other way around, have we proven the science?
The thing is, Douglas isn't forcing anyone to, Douglas isn't going, I love Chef and everyone should watch it. Yeah. Douglas knows Chef is not great.
Yep.
He just watches it in spite of all of that. You think Almost Famous is one of the greatest pieces of cinema from the dawn of time.
But it is.
Except you're wrong.
Yeah. And you try hard to make everybody else watch it.
Right.
I know my limitations.
Right. And I know that, Mad Max Fury Road is the greatest thing ever to be put on film, but that's not helping everybody that is around me that does not share my position.
Mad Max is second to Almost Famous.
Douglas knows Chef is terrible, but he enjoys it, which makes me enjoy it, even though I haven't seen it since. But I just know, I think I like it, despite never having seen it more than once.
There's a John Leguizamo in the movie. Right, we're not allowed to like Jungle Book, and then you can't.
Like, after Jungle Book, you're like, I think I did like Chef. Like, no, when I see Chef on that list, I don't mean it. Chef is trash. No, he just go, made the good Iron Man, and he made the Chef, and he made this spectacular.
Yeah, I like John Favreau. So give him Lion King.
Yeah. And it's not like if he makes a hash of it, we won't still have the first Lion King.
Of course.
We just go, you simple bastard. Why do you do this to yourself?